Jonathan, hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Bagel Tech Photo. I'm Carl Swagger, as always, your host, the guy that's learning something from these two gentlemen, which is Ewan Rankin and Alex G. Fox. Alex, you rushed home to be on the show. Did you make it in one piece?
Well, sort of one piece. A few bits falling off, but, you know, they're still attached by string or something. So we're here now.
Did you pick them up, though, at least?
So you can put them back on? I think they're still in my shirt somewhere.
Thank God. Ewan, how are you? We've been doing audio and all of that crap.
Don't get me started.
See, there we go. That's how we feel.
Oh, right. I might have had enough this afternoon. I'm going to say screw flash and screw 10.6.8, because one of them has bent me over royally this week. I'm sick and tired of I've done everything. I've got new everything and old everything and new firmware and old firmware and software, and it's still crap.
We're going to try and get through this show. Come hell or high water, I guess, as you should say. Everybody that's watching us live in the chat room, of course, can hear us just fine. It's hearing each other seems to be the problem. So we'll work our way through it, and we're going to work our way through the news. Before I get into it, guys, Alex, how's your week been? I'll ask both of you. How's your week been, Alex? Because I kind of heard from Ewan already. I don't know if I should ask him.
Yeah, it's been all right. I've done a fair bit of work and actually got some stuff done around the house, which is really unlike me. So,
you're doing your husband's duties, huh?
It's one of the better ones.
I'm not doing anything constructive duties this week.
Husband duties, is that what we're called?
Something to that effect, anyways. Ewan, do you want to elaborate on your week, or you just...
No, I'm fine. I've just I've been up to Glasgow the last couple of days, and I flew back early this morning, so I'm knackered, and I really didn't need this crap with the audio. But I'm here, and I'm happy, and I'm going to do a great photo show.
Let's get into the news, shall we?
Up five.
You're a great liar, you know that?
I'm fine. Moving on.
let's look at this first. The big story of the week. We've seen leaked photos. We didn't know if it was true, if it wasn't or not. The Olympus Pen E P3. Of course, there's the PL3 also, and the PM1. From what we're seeing, I mean, at least over towards my way, actually, out of Hong Kong, it's a Micro Four Thirds lens camera. It's about $900. And I'm going to ask you guys a little bit about that in a second. $900, 3-inch OLED, should I say, display on this thing. Looks like a nice solid camera, but is it $900 worth solid camera? I know, Alex, you kind of just jumped in. You're probably still having a look at it a little bit, so I'll pop over to you in first. Thoughts on the Olympus here that came out this week, Ewan?
Well, I had a go with the EP1 when it first came out, and it was a nice camera. It was pleasant to hold, not particularly big. Took great pictures. Pictures were stunning, as good as you'd expect, even at the sort of 800 to 1600 ISO range. But it wasn't £500 special over everything else that's out there. And I haven't seen the EP3, so it would be unfair of me to say that this is the truth about everything associated with the EP cameras, but I don't think they're crap, so I can't say it's overpriced crap. I just think it's overpriced in the market for what it delivers, what it does. I don't get bridge cameras, which I fully admit is a detractor from my opinion on this, but I think there's a lot of cameras that are coming out in this bridge market that are hitting a price point that I really think is unrealistic. And they must be selling, because the EP1 sold at that price and did well. The Fuji that we reviewed the other week and the Samsung that are at the same kind of price mark, they're off the shelves completely. I must know nothing about what I'm talking about with bridge cameras, but nothing at all turns me on about this camera.
Mm. Are you turned on, Alex?
It's a pretty little thing, I suppose. It's just like miniaturizing SLRs, and I think that's sort of all they're achieving. I don't think they're achieving much else. I don't think it takes any better pictures than the previous incarnations. I think, you know, they're just finding newer ways of, you know, making a smaller camera and being able to charge more for it because it's newer technology. I think, you know, at the moment, I'd say the actual market is really at a standstill and they're all just trying to find something clever to do.
I think that if you look at the bigger picture and come back from where you're looking at cameras as a whole, I think the reason we're suffering with micro bridge cameras now and the micro DSLR market, as Alex says, is that they've lost invention in R&D. Now, I know we're going to talk about the Nikon concept stuff, which, you know, is all well and good, but that stuff never seems to come to fruition. We saw a Canon concept camera, which was just a single tube that you focused down almost like a telescope. That was a year and a half ago, and that's still never come, still not in production. It's not even close to production. You're not even seeing sneak shots of it. You're not seeing announcements of it. It'll be available in 2012, which they would do. You know, this was a concept camera, and now it's in the drawer, and it's been filed away. And the whole of the digital photography market is doing nothing new. And I think the problem is there's a disease there that it feels like it has to because it's digital, whereas when it was 35mm film, you didn't have to do anything. You just made a camera that took a good picture, and that was enough. Now you've got to frig with it so much that it becomes something that it isn't, and a market has become something that it isn't. But having said that, what I think the camera market has got to do is embrace the app integration, the API, and as you start to get dual core processors in these things, you shouldn't be shrinking the size. You should be making them more into computers. You should give them APIs. You should give them Photoshop integration or digital integration across a broad spectrum. But that will never happen because all of the manufacturers are interested in what they can extort from their market and their introspective control. You'll never get APIs that will allow you to get multiple connectivity to different pieces of software or you know, geotagging is about as good as it's ever going to get, I'm afraid.
Actually, it surprises me about when you're saying integrating with, you know, with other software. You might be right, actually. To me, it would be in their best interest, though, to do that from even my point of view as a consumer. They could sit here and I don't really have to think about much. It just, you know, just does it.
You like it or not, the world is now about application. It's not about hardware and it's not about manufacturing. It's about what you could do with it and the user interface and the user experience. And cameras have, if they stick to the fact they take nice pictures, they're fulfilling their basic concept as a user interface. If people are demanding more than that, then they've got a bigger leap to do than to try and make stuff small.
You feel the same, Alex? I mean, are you feeling Ewan's vibe or?
Yeah, well, see, the two things are happening. Firstly, the megapixelage of even the smallest cameras has got to a point now where people have accepted that it's probably enough. You know, it's got to the point now that once you've got over, I mean, it goes back to Chris's, you know, Chris's work, 12 megapixels is enough. And I think the market has almost said, you know what, it probably is. And also, you know, they've pushed that old technology as far as it can go. So you can go to 16 or 18 on a tiny little sensor, but it's actually a waste of time and nobody wants it. So, but what I think the problem is, in the old days, the camera led the market and say the camera phone was playing catch up and all the rest of it. Now, because so many people use a phone to take their pictures, they're almost using the camera phone as a starting point and they're trying to play catch up with the physical size of the camera to then match the camera phone. And so it's actually working the wrong way. They're trying to say that the size and the convenience is more important than the quality, etc. And I think the market's been led backwards. And so I think it's going to become a problem because you will be able to make smaller and smaller cameras, but their usability is going to get less and less. And so you've got two choices. You either want a camera that is attached to a phone, which is a half decent camera, or you want a good camera. You can't actually have both. And I think at the moment, the camera market is being led by the thought that you can have both, because they can't compete with the iPhone camera because of, I don't know how many millions of iPhone cameras are in people's pockets already. They can't compete with it. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to make their camera as convenient. And that's not the point of a camera. It's not to do with convenience. It's to do with how good the picture is.
If you're buying an EP1, EP3, you're concerned about image quality because it does take a very nice image. But there's other cameras out there that will take images at least as good for half the price, quarter of the price.
Yeah.
The Lumix.
But also, if you've already paid and you already own an iPhone and it's already in your pocket, are you really going to want to spend $900 on something because it's small? You've got that small thing and it's a byproduct of something you already own. So why are you going to want to go and spend $900 on another small thing when you already own one in the first place?
I think the other thing you've got to look at with this range of cameras is the fact that, that everything that you see in front of you, you then have to buy add-on. You want more lenses, the lenses are going to cost more. Okay, we accept that. You want a viewfinder, you've got to pay for an integrated viewfinder to come out with this thing, and it's not cheap. You're talking about hundreds of pounds of add-ons. You know, if you look at the DSLR market, if you've got Canon, Nikon, Olympus DSLR, Sony DSLR, Sigma DSLR, you're buying lenses and add-ons for those cameras at less than half the price of some of the add-ons for this camera. I don't understand how that balances at all. You didn't hear that? It's okay. Carry on.
Yeah,
we've got some audio trouble if you're listening. I apologize, but we'll try and work through it. So
okay, yeah, the audio's came back just now. So it's funny you guys are sitting here talking about this because me and my wife sat at the kitchen table the other day and we were talking about cameras and we've seen a commercial for like these compact cameras and we started talking about is there really a market for this type of camera much anymore now that the way the cell phones are getting? I think it's almost instinct now that when you want something compact, you want something with you, you just grab it out of your pocket and you take a picture with it. I personally, from a consumer hope trying to get in a prosumer point of view, I see $900 here as too much for the type of camera that you're getting here. I feel like I'm looking at this and thinking, first and foremost, I'm happy with my iPhone. It's small enough. This is a small camera. I don't need another small camera. I'm not thinking pixelage. I'm not thinking photo quality right now. I'm thinking about convenience. And then when you get past that, I'm thinking, okay, I'll just get a DSLR. I'll get a better, higher-end camera. I'll get a Nikon that's going to rough me another $100 or, I mean, maybe $200, but I got a Nikon then, and it feels like a pro camera. I'm tell me, either one of you guys, am I in left field here of seeing that this kind of market here, even by what you're saying, Alex, by everybody who knows how many people have an iPhone in their pocket, they're choosing that cell phone camera over these cameras. And when it's at this kind of price, all the more this camera probably won't sell.
Yeah, I agree completely. You think about, the way people take pictures and why people take pictures. If you go back before the cell phone camera, most households had one camera and the father used to have it round his neck and he was the one that took the pictures and everybody else just stood there and smiled. And that was just the way it worked. Yep. Now you've put a camera in everybody's pocket for everybody's convenience. And there's pictures left, right, and center. Everywhere you look, there's a picture of something you probably don't want to look at. But you still only got maybe, I know it sounds very 1950s, but you've still only got the one person, head of the household, etc., that actually wants to walk around holding a proper camera and taking proper pictures. And that person wants a gadget. That person wants an SLR. They want all the lenses. They want to feel that they're a proper photographer. This is trying to jump into a marketplace which it doesn't actually exist. It was only created because of someone put a camera on a phone in the first place. The vast majority of people that take pictures are not interested in having a second little camera. The only other camera people want is a big macho, look at the size of my camera.
Just hang on a second, because of based on the sales of these type of cameras, the market's disagreeing with you, though, Alex. I agree with you. I don't understand these. I don't find a place for them in my mind. But the market is telling you otherwise. These things are sold out left, right, and center.
Yeah, but I think a lot of that is if you look at who buys them. I think a lot of these things are bought for people as gifts because there is. These things in the marketplace, and let's face it, half the cameras that are sold in these shops are not bought by the people walking into the shops. They're bought as a present for somebody else.
Well, I think there's a kin thing here to Leica. I've got one of my followers who's got a Leica, and I've got another follower on Twitter who's got the Pen 1, and they talk about the Pen 1 like they would talk about a cherished loved one almost. It's an icon, it's a thing that they have, it's possessive item. It's not a camera. It's got its brand name. They don't talk about taking out their camera, they talk about taking out the pen. It's these things have morphed into something that I don't get and you don't get because we wouldn't buy them.
I don't get either.
But there's a lot of people out there seem to be getting it.
I think, I mean, fundamentally, I think what's quite important, you've got to recognize there's a difference between a camera and something that takes pictures. I know that sounds really, you know, it sounds like, oh, what are you talking about? A camera to me is the thing which is technologically, you know, very, you know, it's advanced and you can do some very clever things. What people do these days, they use a piece of machinery that takes pictures. And that is not necessarily the same as, you know, what we would call a camera. And I think this thing here, it's trying to be both things. I mean, a lot of these small things are bought, like I say, they're bought purely because there's something else to own. I mean, that's how I feel about them. I wouldn't necessarily take a SLR on holiday. I wouldn't probably use my iPhone on holiday. Something small and useful would help. But, you know, I'm not sure that $900 is that marketplace. £150 is the right marketplace.
But that's no one's disagreeing with you that something small and useful would help.
That's what I think we keep going on about, though. I think it's the price here is that we're talking about here. I don't think we're not denying that the camera takes good pictures. It probably does. No. We haven't played with it personally. But we are sitting here saying $900 for this tiny little thing. And for $200 more, I can feel like a pro. And this makes me feel like, I've moved up, but it's still small. I'll still find myself using my phone camera, if it's a good one, of course, my phone camera more. That way I can post it to Facebook. I can post it to Flickr. It's on the fly. I can email the photo. Everything is on there. And I'm waiting for the day, as a consumer, we've seen like the stupid little put your iPhone in this thing and, you know, and who knows what will ever come of that thing. But I'm waiting for the day as a consumer, just a second, you know, as a consumer, that if we can integrate a system like an app system, like a camera system that does all of these things that the iPhone does, but does it better, then that's the market. That's the next market. Oh, go ahead, Ewan. I'm sorry. I was just.
I think the point is that, you know, you look at lenses. Now, I paid £2,500 for one of my lenses, and it's a 70-200mm. f2.8 lens and it's a great lens. Now I paid £120 for a Sigma 70-30 that I owned 10 years ago, and why did I pay £2,500 as opposed to £130 for a lens that was actually bigger in terms of focal length, 70-300 rather than 70-200? And the answer was because the price difference that I paid gave me a performance difference which was equal. These cameras, you're not telling me there's a performance difference or a picture quality difference which is $500 better than a Canon G12 or a Pentax F10. You know, that's what you're saying. Is the increase in price increased in technology and functionality and clarity and quality? Not in a million years. And if you buy one of these things, you need your head looking at. That's my honestly belief. But I'm a dunce. Mm.
I mean, the only thing that could justify any, not even this price, but any sort of price, is if it is a point and shoot, then it points and shoots and gives you a picture as good as if me or you is using a professional camera. That's the only justification for spending a fortune on a point and shoot. But if a point and shoot is still going to need you to be really clever and know what you're doing, then why have a point and shoot in the first place? The only selling point these have got over any iPhone or anything else is they've got Zoom. Now, as soon as they can bring out Zoom on an iPhone or anything like that, a proper Zoom, then these things are just, they're gone, they're finished, that's the end of it.
iPhone 5 with optical Zoom, I can see it now.
There you go.
Is that an iPhone 5 in your pants?
Yes, it is. And the lens is expanding. Let's move on now to the Ricoh. We just talked about Pentax. Ricoh, I believe, is that how you pronounce it?
Ricoh, yeah. Ricoh.
Yeah, acquired Pentax. We give Pentax a lot of crap on this, even though we just said something nice about them a second ago. Have Pentax sold out, basically? And don't take that literally. I mean, have they said, we've given up, let somebody else take it off our hands, let somebody else worry about it?
I don't know what the ins and outs of this story are, but for me, I think the thing that Ricoh's looking for is they're looking to get themselves into a market that they're not currently in and start to do more with digital imaging, because they're really not as astute as Pentax when it comes to the digital image process. I think this is a sale that they want for quick R&D more than it is for anything else.
Oh, but what do they gain by this, though? Alex, what do they gain by this?
One of the things we do gloss over occasionally is Pentax makes some seriously good medium format digital cameras.
Yeah, see, that's true. I don't think of them as that. That's a really good point.
And and so if you want to get into this higher end, I mean, we talk Nikon, Canon, but that, you know, for the purposes of this show, normally that's the high end of what we're talking about. But in terms of fully fledged digital cameras, Nikon and Canon are the real bottom end, you know, for the proper pro market. And so, you know, Pentax, you know, for 15 grand, you get a serious, serious camera.
Mm.
You know, one of the best things on the market and half the price of, you know, the top of the range Hasselblad. So, you know, Ricoh may be looking at getting into a very high-end market, basically rebranding. I mean, I think the number one selling medium format digital cameras are the Pentaxes, aren't they? Mm. So, you know, it's a very quick jump up the medium format table.
I think the other thing to think about is if you look at us talking about Nikon and Canon, you've got two very much consumer-oriented organisations. Well, when you get into some of the more niche things like Minolta, Pentax, Ricoh, they do an awful lot of stuff which is industrial-based imaging. So you're talking about camera lenses for X-ray machines, you know, those kind of things, or lens focusing for scanners, that kind of thing. It's not as much of a commercial market for them.
I was just saying, you know, it's more of, is this, I guess by Ricoh buying them, is this a way to push Pentax in more of a prosumer or consumer thing? Because we never really talk about Pentax as the pro user, more of the prosumer. Is this?
I think it's neither.
It's neither one.
It's neither. I think what they're buying these people for is industrial.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I think that they go beyond prosumer or consumer. I think they have got the opportunity here to go far beyond anything that Pentax has done before. I mean, Ricoh are a big company, and, you know, as you were saying, they make parts for extremely high-end performance equipment, which aren't just, you know, which aren't just based on cameras, you know, normal cameras. So you put these two things together.
They're huge in the defense market.
If it works
market.
Well, it could go both sides of the market very easily.
If you're looking at image sensing and that kind of stuff there, where you're talking about an optical recognition through night vision-y, the actual optics at the end of the night vision stuff before it gets transferred into digital data, before it then becomes enhanced on the screen, you know, Ricoh make the lenses and that kind of stuff and the digital optometry for all of that kind of thing. It's they're huge in the defense market too.
I was going to say, is this going to be some very, very big military-funded operation?
Pentax have stumbled on some. Ricoh have found out. Ricoh bought them because they want what they've stumbled on, perhaps.
It's possible, yeah. I mean, it could be a wonderful marriage, actually. It could be, I don't know, I see it better for Pentax more than anything, obviously. I could be wrong on that.
There's a comment in the chat room from Kev saying, apparently Hoyer sold Pentax. I didn't even know Hoyer owned them. Well, I've got to say, I didn't either, but that's perhaps the point, is the fact that you won't actually physically see a change at the consumer end. You'll see Pentax selling cameras just as they currently do. What Ricoh have got, they'll do their little camera market that they've currently got, but what you'll see behind the source of the two merging together isn't something that will affect our lives in the slightest, perhaps.
Well, in any way, if it does affect us, it could only affect us better. Mm. And, you know, with any luck, they might sponsor us now. Look, we've been positive.
Yeah. Well, with your nice words, Alex, it might be. I mean,
as long as they don't listen to back episodes.
That, they're still
exactly.
By you saying that, though, Alex, it actually, the more and more we give Pentax crap on this program, the more and more I'm starting to wanting to actually check them out, to wanting to go see these cameras, because it sounds like the camera that, by what I gather from you, Alex, the camera that feel like a pro, maybe even shoot like a pro, but you don't have to sit there and get a mortgage on your house to actually afford one.
Well, I've looked in, you know, I've got medium format cameras and I use medium format digital sometimes, and I've played around and I've gone backwards and forwards, and other than, you know, getting a big mortgage on my house, I keep coming back to Pentax. I keep coming back and think, you know what? You know, and it's almost got to the point where I'm sort of ready to take the plunge because of, it's not like they make one camera and it's been around for 6 months. They've made a few cameras. They've been around a long time.
It's odd. Yeah.
And you think, you know, they must, there's people out there obviously know what they're doing and they keep supporting these medium format cameras. I think possibly Pentax should maybe not think so much about this, you know, the consumer market. And I think they should go for, they should go, hello, you know who Hasselblad is. We are just as good and we're half the price. Maybe you should be looking at us. And maybe Ricoh are going to help push them that direction. I hope so.
The problem that you get with Pentax is that they do, I mean, my first camera, my first SLR was a Pentax. So, you know, I've got a recognition with Pentax, absolutely. But what happens is they blow all of that innovation, quality and clarity and brand recognition by making a camera that's made out of Lego. Or they make a camera that's all red with a few yellow spots all over it. And you're kind of like, you know, desperate to show that they've got some change and innovation that separates them from market. They separate themselves in the clown end of the market rather than separating themselves out publicly in the diamond ring end of the market, you know?
Yeah.
It does put into context the fact that when Hasselblad wanted to make a special camera, they got Ferrari. And when Pentax wanted to, they got Lego.
Unfortunately, that's just how we... Touché. That's probably why they get so much crap from us here on the program. But Ewan does make a good point. You know, even as a prosumer, you're not really thinking about the maker that makes a camera that's made out of Legos. But maybe if Pentax would start thinking more like Sony, but not charging Sony's price, they might actually have a good... Because Sony makes great cameras, but we always feel that their price is just not there. You know, it's just too much. If Pentax could find that realm.
Their branding and marketing department wants shooting and not with a Pentax.
There's you. Last story, guys. If you guys are done with Pentax, are you done rubbing
we're done.
The right way, Alex? So we can
hopefully. Yeah, I think the robot in the corner is asking me something about, are we done with Pentax? And I'm quite happy to say we are, yeah. Oh, the robot's laughing again.
Last story brings us over to the giant Nikon, a concept camera, which we were talking about just before the show. We see concept cameras. They come, they go. We never see anything about them again. This, to me, was shown off in France. This thing, to me, looks like a jar full of Christmas balls.
Yeah, ball bearings.
Yeah.
Well, how is there a camera inside this thing?
I have no idea.
I don't see it. I don't see the lens. I guess it's a concept camera. So, I mean, I guess it has an LCD screen or these, how is the hell is this thing actually working?
Well, it's like,
cause I don't see a camera.
It's like concept cars. Concept cars don't actually drive. I'm going to lay you money that thing doesn't actually take a picture.
Looks like one of them toys that you used to get electrocuted with, you know,
a Van den Graaff generator.
Yeah.
It does.
I would like to have one of them sitting on top of my computer as like a webcam. That'd be really cool.
Actually, and you could possibly all in balls
may have a lens going a different direction. So you could have like 360 degree vision of your room. You know, it'd be quite good to do this show in 360 degree, but it might be a webcam, it might be a security cam, or it might be a scam cam, and we could all be looking at this going, oh, yeah, all right, fair enough.
Maybe all those ball bearings roll round and you get like a gyroscopic effect that holds your hands steadier when you're taking an image.
Or they could have taken the eye of, a wasp or a fly when it's got all them hundreds and little different lenses in it. Maybe that's what they're doing.
It's a magic spell from Macbeth. Eye of Newt.
I think it has Hershey Kisses inside.
Could be.
I mean, it looks plastic.
It's an electrocution toy.
I bet people are really happy that we did this story and analysed this concept camera because we know nothing about it.
Well, we don't know anything about it.
They've used the word protoplastic, but neither does the article. Must be very good.
Neither does the article. I mean, we know what it's a fully customizable SLR. It has what are they comparing this thing to? They're going to call it the multi-bowl cam, and it's going to be a panoramic morning after hit. So they don't know what the hell they're talking about either. They don't know what it is either.
It's called an eyeball, isn't it?
They say eyeballish.
Some's eyeballish, yeah. So if they call it eyeball, they're screwed with Apple for the start.
I just think this is a... I mean, I'm really quickly looking through, and I don't think I should quote any of the words in the chat, which comes after this article. But I don't think anyone said anything any more entertaining than we have or any more insightful.
Exactly.
So I wouldn't think that this has got legs.
It might just get up and walk away.
Well, whoever wrote the article in Gadget just wrote stuff like, yeah, really complicated, really nice, really concept-y.
Yeah, no one knew anything about this. Or even if this is really a camera. You know what it is? It's a baseball, right? And it's going to open the World Series or something, and Nikon sponsored it, and someone thought it was a camera.
Dave in the chat room says it's a disco ball, and I reckon it's a disco ball that looks down girls' tops.
Oh, well, it's got a use then, I suppose.
I want one. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We'll have one at the bash next week.
It used the word protoplastic, so that maybe that's what it does. It's
Dave's thinking outside the box.
It's not a box. Literally. It's a ball.
It's a ball. Sorry. Outside the ball.
Think outside the ball. There's the title.
There you go.
God.
I'm sorry. Oh, can't be more entertaining goodness. About this one, but...
Should we do some questions?
I don't think we can beat this one anymore.
Yeah, do some questions. Let's see if I can answer some questions dead horse. That I've never, ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do the questions. First one comes from Mark. He said, "Hi, guys, loving the podcast, and I hope you can find time to answer my question. We usually try to. I know that Ewan does a lot of sports photography, and it's something I would love to get into, but I'm afraid my only long lens is a Sigma 70 millimeter lens, which I think may not be up to the job. Bearing in mind that Ewan is always saying about doing things cheaply, when he started, does he have any tips for me to get started, but without spending too much on equipment? I'm using a Nikon D90. Sorry, Ewan. Thanks for your help.
He doesn't need to spend any money on anything. I mean, I've got a very expensive lens, but that's because I tend to track stuff and I want a very quick autofocus because things are moving towards me. If you've got a cheap lens and the 7300 is cheap, you can spend about £70 for them on eBay. Up to about £130 new. If you've got one of those, it will do the job more than adequately, but what it won't do is the autofocus will not track anywhere near fast enough for something that's moving towards you. So you need to think about where you set yourself up. You're looking for tracking shots, things that run parallel to the camera, more than things that run towards the camera, or you go for slower sports, baseball, cricket, where no one's running at you and you're just looking for a static shot. If you've got a static shot, when I first started shooting cricket, I had one of those with a 2x converter on it and it was shooting at something stupid like F11 with the 2x converter on. But I still got some great pictures with it. You know, just have to boost your ISO rating and compensate. I think that's an f3.5 to an f5.6 lens. It might be a 6.3 lens. So it's already quite slow to start with in terms of aperture to let light in. So give yourself a better chance, Mark. Just sit yourself down where you can track the shot or where the focus isn't going to change much or where you can be static and you'll still get great shots.
Yeah, anything to add since you're a Nikon man there, Alex?
Yeah, what I would say, if you've got any problems like that, you've got a 70 to 300, do not zoom in too far. You've got 12.3 megapixels on this, and the chances of actually needing 12.3 megapixels to actually, print anything. You know, I mean, unless you're printing a poster, you don't need 12.3. So what I would say is, if you want someone running down the wing or whatever it is you're doing, make sure you're only zoomed in half the distance that you normally would be, because that's going to give you twice the coverage, and crop it afterwards, because if you do that, the camera will react a lot faster because you're not zoomed in anywhere near as far. You will get more lighting because you're not zoomed in anywhere near as far, and it will make, you know, the whole thing a lot easier. I mean, one of the things you see in the newspaper, they've got like 10 grand's worth of equipment, but if you notice, they've got these great big lenses, but they don't zoom in. They don't zoom right in on whoever's just headed the ball. They take a picture that 25% most of that frame will be taken up with that player heading the ball. And it goes in the newspaper and it's cropped to look like it's the most fantastically, brilliantly captured frame, perfectly shot you'll ever see. They don't show you all the crap that's around the outside of it. So remembering that, you know, if you think you need to zoom in at 200, zoom in at 100 and crop it afterwards and you'll look like a genius. There's a trick of the
trade. Is that what you said, Ewan? Because neither one of us heard you.
Not quite, but it's good tips. Okay. Absolutely fine. I mean, the thing with, as Alex says there, you know, if you zoom in, the other thing you're going to get is very soft in the focus as well from 200 onwards. So
we deal. We deal. Next question, guys, comes from John. He says, hi to me, Alex, Ewan, and Chris. We'll pass on our regards to Chris since he's not here this week. Please, can Will Green come back on the podcast and steer the conversation back to porn? Just reading this for the first time. We'll see what we can do, John. He said, no, sorry.
We have to see what his doctor says first, hey?
Yeah, yeah. We have to actually get Will and a doctor's note to actually be on the program. He said, my real question is, my local golf club has asked me to shoot some portraits of the community for a wanted board, and I wanted to have some inspiration to do something which would stand out and be different from the usual. Obviously, I can draw what I have seen at other golf clubs, but most are just portraits against the wall in the bar. Any ideas that are going to be used in local press and publicity? I do have some ideas, but if you don't ask, you don't get, which is true, John. And I'm sorry I screwed up your question so much. Any ideas, Alex?
Well, to start off with, the ease of taking them this time of year and you're in a golf club, you've got every excuse to take them outside. You know, don't make your life difficult by taking them inside against a bar or anything else. Get them in their silly golfing uniforms or whatever they do. Get them playing golf. Get them outside. You know, make your life as easy as possible. And with a golf club, I dare say you've got plenty of space. So if you can't find a nice background in all of that, I'll be surprised. Get the sun in the direction you want it to help you, and use everything that's there to make your life easier. As for, I don't know, gimmicky things to do with wanted posters or wanted boards, Ewan is more adventurous with his photography than I am. And I'm sure Carl can come up with some ideas. But like I say, don't shoot them indoors. Don't do the bog standard thing. Get them outside and get them, you know, make the use of the facilities and make your life a lot easier that way.
Is that what you're thinking, Ewan?
I agree entirely. I mean, he's exactly right there. It's summer. Get out and shoot while the light's good. It's a decent summer at the moment, so do as much as you can. I think the thing is as well, treat it like you're trying to sell your golf club. You're not trying to sell. If you're talking about using these in press, then the last thing you want is a mugshot, because, you know, it's based on the way some people look, they're going to steer people away from your golf club rather than to it. So I would say get out there, shoot pictures of them with prominent features of your golf club in the background, and use your depth of field so that those things aren't over or in the image. They're just knocked out on the depth of field, and let your people stand out in the front. But you advertise your golf club while you've got the chance.
And make sure people look happy. Make sure that, you know, you got your president of the golf club and he's got a big smile on his face. A lot of people are scared of golf clubs because they feel that their place is they're not welcome.
Very true.
Make sure your picture's got your president with a smile on his face and a pretty girl handing him a beer or something.
That could be the harder part.
I joined the golf club if that were the case.
That could be the harder issue though, mate, getting the president to smile.
Well, tell him they're free. That'll make him smile.
Yeah, exactly. Last question comes from Frank. He says, hi, gents. I've just started listening to the show. I'm loving it. Thanks, Frank, for listening. I don't know why it took me so long to find you. Well, we're glad you did. Listening to some old episodes, I heard Alex mention barreling when talking about a lens.
Barreling.
I Googled it and read the answers, but I'm not sure that I understand it that well. So perhaps you would be so kind to give me the Bagel Tech photo definition. Also, how do I stop it happening?
Oh, if it's a Bagel Tech photo definition, I can make it up as I go along. But the real definition is when you use a zoom lens or any zoom that's got, you know, from one point of one length of focal point to another length, there's a point in the middle which is normally quite nice, and it's where there's like a medium of the lens. It's where it functions best and it's where it's designed. That's the point where it's designed to work the best. Once you go either side of that, what happens? I mean, it's an optical fact that if you use a very long lens, if you say shot something that was completely square, which, I mean, I take photos of paintings And it's very obvious if I haven't taken a photo of a painting which is in a frame and the frame doesn't look square. Mm. What will happen, you get it pinching in the middle from, you know, from the top and bottom, and it will slightly pinch in the middle. Or it will blow up and slightly get a curvature to it, which is, you know, I mean, most people are, have seen fisheye photography. With fisheye, it's completely acceptable that the object will be a globe-like object because of, you know, that's why you get the word fisheye, because it's the shape of a fisheye. But all lenses, unless they are fixed prime lenses, they will fisheye to a certain extent, or once you go past a certain point, they'll actually pull in and pinch to a certain extent. And that's just a fact of any
optics.
Long lens you do. If you're taking a picture of something like a landscape, it is happening, but you really won't notice it unless you put it through a bit of software to correct it. And then you'll think, oh, I didn't realize that that line was slightly straighter rather than curved. You won't notice it. But if you actually take a picture of something which is square, you will notice it very, very simply. To stop it happening is you'll either use a fixed lens, you know, a 50mm, 80mm, 100mm, and they are designed purely to work in that length of lens, so you're not going to get it. Or you put it in something like Photoshop, which has lens correction, and it will fix it for you. And the modern Photoshops know what camera you're using, know what lens you're using, and also know what focal length you're using, and it will click a button and it will fix it for you. But it's quite interesting to put things through Photoshop that your mind says are completely straight, and then you actually do a proper correction on the lens and you realize how out of straight and how barreled and pinched it actually is. So it will happen. It happens all the time unless you're using a fixed prime lens, but you know, that's just part of photography. You correct it afterwards, or you don't worry about it.
Got anything to add there, Ewan? Alex covered us pretty well. But
yeah, no, I mean, basically what it is when you look at the edge of the image, things that should be straight are actually curved. And it's noticeable when you shoot straight edges close to the edge of your image. That's when you really see the difference. If you're shooting round things close to the edge, you can get away with it quite easily. Generally speaking, if your lens is below 90 millimeters, you'll probably get some curvature with it. I mean, I've got a 50 mil lens and I still get barreling with the 50 mil lens, and it's a prime lens. At 90, you'll probably find that you'll start to get that effect disappearing on most lenses very, very easily. I always shoot portraits in 135 mil lens if I can, because it's guaranteed not to give me any issues. It's an expensive lens as well, so it does correct. But no, ditto what he said.
Okay. That was simple. If you guys would like to get in your questions to the Bagel Tech Photo podcast, simple to do, bageltechphoto@gmail.com. As you can see, we'll get to them each and every week, and we will get to yours, so please send them in. And I was going to say, what was I going to make? Oh, yeah, the Bagel Tech Photo group. I always keep forgetting to mention this on the podcast, and I don't want to forget it anymore. It's at flickr.com/groups/. Help me out, Ewan.
It's flickr.com/groups/ Bagel Tech Photo. And I'm putting up my June assignment today.
Couldn't hear you, but I know that you gave out the right address.
Thank you.
So, anyways, head on over. We're almost 40 members in there now, which is great. It's continuing to grow. It doesn't matter if you've got an Olympus $900 camera or an iPhone camera or whatever it is. Just get them up there, get out, take some pictures, share them with the community, and we all have a lot of fun. It really is a lot of fun seeing everybody's photographs up there. Before we head out on this week's show, though, we've got to thank our sponsor, UK2.net. They keep the network alive, this podcast alive. Head on over to BagelTechNews.com right now. Go to the bottom of the page there. You'll see their emblem there, their logo there. Click on that. It's going to take you over to UK2.net, where you can take advantage right now by using the promo code BagelTech. And that's 15% off anything. From us right now. So yeah, if you're looking for web hosting, domain names, a VPS server, check out their prices. We're not telling you to buy anything. Just have a look, and if you like what you see, take advantage of that 15%, because it's for anything. You can use it on anything. Again, Bagel Tech is the code. UK2.net. They keep us alive and they keep us from having to go down to the bank and get a second mortgage on all of our homes. So we're very, very much appreciative. Support us by supporting UK2.net. I guess that pretty much wraps up this show. I'm sorry, you know, again, is there anything I'm leaving out, Ewan?
No, you don't want a cheap thingy?
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, the cool thingy. See?
A cheap thingy.
I hear something. Very good, cheap thingy.
Have you got one then this week, Alex?
Yeah, it's something I used, and I used ages ago, and I actually, one of my bits of software said you need to update it, and I'd completely forgotten about it, right? And it's brilliant, and it's a free bit of software, right? And it's called, it's hard to say because I think it's Dutch, it's Software Build, which is F-O, no, it's not, it's S-O-F-O-R-T-B-I-L-D. And what it is a free, which is the best thing in the world, and it's a tethering piece of software. So you can plug your, it's Nikon only, I'm afraid, but that's why I have it. But you can plug your Nikon DSLRs via your USB cable into your Mac, and it will operate, it will tether operate your camera. And it does all the very clever, fantastic things that all the very, very expensive Nikon pieces of software that you have to spend hundreds and hundreds of pounds on do. And it's free. And I quite often used to play with this and try and do sort of clever things. And it's really nice to be able to sit there looking at it on a 24, 27-inch screen and look at your picture while you're taking it, play with all your settings, play with everything, shoot it. I mean, it does everything. And it's free. And I've always been amazed by it. And I'd completely forgotten about it. And it came up on my screen and I thought, you know what, I must mention this to all the Nikon users to at least download it and have a play and see what you think, because I think it's great.
Free is good. Free is good. Love free. Good pick. Well, if you're a Nikon user, it's a damn good pick. So, Ewan, I know you got one because it's right here in front of me. I just didn't see it.
Yeah, no, my advice is if you're using your DSLR to shoot some video, you've got the problem of being steady. You either put it on a tripod or that's the end of it. And if you want to buy a Steadicam system for your DSLR, then you should have bought a better video camera that added image stabilization maybe or something. My quick tip, get yourself down to your local scrap dealers and get a really old, and old ones are better than new ones because they've got airbags in them, but get yourself a really old steering wheel out of a car. Drill it out so that you can get your lenses through it and put a ball mount on it from underneath, and then use the steering wheel at arm's length with it out for controlling your shot. So you can also put little wires on for triggers, remote triggers, that kind of stuff, and use your thumb to switch it on and off or even take a picture. There you go.
Yeah. Cool deal. Just make sure that when you get the steering wheel, you didn't steal it from somebody's car.
Yeah, make sure it's still not attached.
Yeah, that too.
However, saying that, an entire car is steadier than a steering wheel.
I know we're doing the podcast completely out of order today, but hey, that's just the way it's been. And that's the way it's going to be for the rest of the day.
Difficult day. I hope it's not the same for this evening.
Where can we get a hold of you guys? Ewan, where can we get a hold of you?
You can get me on Twitter at Ewan Rankin or at Bagel Tech News, and you can get me for commercial photography at ewanrankin.co.uk.
Sweet. And Alex, go ahead.
Well, if you're asking me where you can get me, feel delighted to get me at Alex G. Fox on Twitter. And other places coming soon, but as for everything, I haven't got around to it yet.
Well, we'll have to dig deeper into the other places soon. That will be interesting. We'll save that for an upcoming show. If anybody's bothered, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/Kyle Swagger. We will be back next week. More photo news, more photo fun, all coming your way. Thanks for listening this week. Sorry, it's been a bit of a cluster. But we'll try to get back on track next week. Thanks for listening to Bagel Tech Photo.
Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.